Good afternoon. You're listening to Praxis here on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. I am about to bring in on the phone someone who, if you're from the Spokane area, you've probably heard of. I feel like she's a legendary activist, and I'm excited to have her on with me. Deb, can you hear me out there?
Yes, I can.
All right. Well, you are on the air. If you wouldn't mind starting by just telling our listeners a little bit about who you are, what your background is, how you came into doing the activism work that you do today?
Okay. My name is Deb Abrahamson. I'm a member of the Spokane Tribe. I was born and raised on the Spokane Reservation, which is located 45 miles northwest of Spokane. And I got into activism as a result of a family home. My father built a log home along the confluence of the Spokane and Shimokin Creek area. And Shimokin Creek is a tributary which runs alongside a mill site, a uranium mill site. And when the home was built, well, it was partly built, we did not know that there were concerns related to the uranium mining and that there was drainage going into the creek. And so as a result, haven't lived there. And that's kind of what got me started into this this process. I saw an ad in the paper and a notice, and it said that they were going to talk about the uranium mill site down at Ford. And so I thought, well, geez, I don't know enough, so I'll go in. And the meeting happened at Spokane Regional Health District. So I went in. I'd never gone to a hearing before. I'd never testified before. And I had my youngest son, who was 3 months at the time, and I brought him with me to the meeting. Didn't know any different, you know. And then what I heard and what I saw unfolding in front of me was disturbing. With the mining company, EPA, and tribal officials talking about the issues around the tailings ponds and everything and the drainages that were happening out of that system. And so I got up and spoke, and from then on, I just kind of have been involved. And that's how I got started. Anyway, that's first step, and that was in 1994.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been 25 years, and we're still trying to get Midnight Mine cleaned up.
Right.
Would you say, do you think that the issues around the uranium mine, the site, I've been talking to people the last few days in planning this show, and a lot of people who aren't tribal members or who aren't really ardent environmentalists have no idea that there was a uranium mine so close to town.
Right.
Do you think, is it more known on the reservation? Is it more known in that community? And can you talk a little bit about that disconnect?
It's more known. It's more evident. There are, you know, there are two mine sites and a mill site. The mill site is located just off the reservation on the Shimokin Creek boundary. Midnight Mine is located in the interior of the reservation, and Western Nuclear was located in the interior along the banks of the Spokane River on the west side of the reservation. And many of our people worked in the mine beginning in the 1950s and 60s. My father was one of the workers. And so people are very aware, but when, in my case, I just look at the situation, when you're born into it, you just accept it as, oh, okay, uranium mining, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know about it, and there's not any, there weren't any meetings to say, well, this is not going to be good for you, this is bad for you. It was all about employment. It was all about how much money people were going to make and how much was going to go with the tribe. Well, you know, people made wages, but it was temporary wages. And then it folded. You know, Western Nuclear folded and Midnight Mine folded. Western Nuclear has been remediated, and so that, because they did not have the same issue as Midnight Mine, which is when they were mining, they went deep and they broke into the aquifer, which is a perpetual water flow, and that's the biggest issue for Midnight Mine, is in the closure process, is how to deal with that, because of all the acid drainage, because of all of the water that has gone down into the creeks and into the Spokane River through the years past.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, you've been consistently working on this since 1994. There was kind of a big upsurge in people talking about the health effects, primarily on tribal members, but on everyone in the region,
right,
about 10 years ago. And so now there's this public meeting tomorrow that is part of the reason for the timing today, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the EWU Center. Can you talk a little bit about this new round, this meeting, this new round of activity that's happening right now?
Well, Newmont Mining Corporation, which is now, as a result of a $10 billion purchase of gold ore, is now the largest gold mining corporation in the world. And they purchased it for $10 billion. So now they've put in a proposal. Well, they put in a proposal last year around July asking for change-up in the record of decision, in the cleanup plan. And what they're basically requesting is lowering the standard. And they're basing it on background level. So they put in the proposal to EPA. Community didn't hear about it until Lee first went to a meeting out there, and then we just happened to talk, and I happened to go down to an event down at the Saranac building, and I met up with her, and she came up and just asked me, well, what's going on out there? Because I went out there, and this and that happened, and this didn't happen. And so I didn't even know about the meeting. I didn't even know that this proposal was in place. And so together, along with Jerry, we've been working on getting more information and finding out. And so the first thing was to request a meeting with EPA to find out what's going on, get an update, because they're the oversight system that is supposed to be watching out for us. And there's also a community involvement plan that took 6 years of processing and negotiating with community to put in place, that's in place for Midnight Mine. So we ask that that the community involvement plan be honored. We're asking that community be able to speak and understand the impacts and learn about the impacts of this, if this decision occurs. And what we've always been worried about is that we have never been at the decision-making tables when decisions are made about life and death situations for our people. And that's why we try and continue to hold the community meetings to keep the flow of communication open for people to develop an understanding about the just the complexities of these of the closure process and the regulatory issues surrounding the such a toxic environment.
Because
as far as I've been concerned, I think the mining company has already been received far many two concessions in this process, and our community and our people have been neglected and left by the roadside.
And so I'm not sure in which year it was declared a Superfund site, but I know that the Midnight Mine, the site of this tailings pond is the biggest Superfund site, at least in Washington, but it's one of the most significant in the entire West. Is this attempt to loosen the standards, is it related to the new administration's EPA? Is this something that's happening more broadly that you know of?
Well, that's kind of our first impression in terms of looking back at the paperwork and trying to find out, you know, just looking at the process, because there's a five-year process. So I pulled that five-year plan up, and I saw that in the five-year plan, it states that the five-year plan ends in March of 2019. But this process, this request, was 6 months ahead of time. So that was one of the concerns. The second concern is that when EPA put in these proposals, and this is through their own information that they put out, is that the first time they put in a request, 12 days, within 12 days, EPA responded. A second request was the same day approval. That was concerning.
From the company to the EPA?
The request from the company to EPA was the same day approval. And so those red flags in terms of looking at, okay, what are you guys up to? You know, this isn't logical. How is it that you're going ahead 6 months ahead of the game and doing this? And so it did feel for me that they were taking advantage of the Trump administration and their deregulation posture.
It does seem that way.
So
I'm wondering if you can speak to the impact that you've observed of this site on your people, on your community, and why, you know, we should all be getting involved in trying to address this just as a health concern.
Well, the impact has been significant. Culturally, to our ecosystem, to our subsistence food gathering, and so many things have been impacted. The air quality, the most significant is the loss of people, the loss of our people. I checked with our enrollment office this morning to see, well, how many people have we lost in the past year? 39. We're a tribe of 2,800. And and the community, the reservation community, is around 1,200 to 1,300 people. So 39 people out of that level of population is pretty significant. The other issue is that we are impacted in a large way health-wise. So there's a high level of autoimmune issues. Lupus, for instance, clusters of lupus. Cancer rates are high. The dialysis and, you know, kidney issues, anything that is going to detoxify the body is one of the hardest hit through this process. Plus, many of the people have worked in the mine, and the first losses that we witnessed were the women, the mothers and grandmothers, who had multiple people, like their sons and their husbands, who worked in the mines, who came back, and they did their clothing. There were several cases where they were the first diagnosed with cancer and passed away early on.
Because they were doing the laundry?
We have others who talk about, you know, the fact that when they were working there, there was no... Initially, they had short training, but once you got involved and working day-to-day, the occupational and safety standards just went out the window. So people were coming home in the same clothes that they worked in, so all the yellow cake and the dust and everything from their boots and their clothing went back into the home. So that was another way that it spread in the community. Plus, all of the trucking that went on the roadways, EPA ran a radon van through one roadway and had 14 hot spots to clean up along that roadway where chunks of the uranium fell off the uncovered trucks, like around, rough roads in the area. And for years, up until I think 10 years ago, there was no fencing around Midnight Mine. There was fencing around Western Nuclear, but Midnight had no fencing, and they had two lakes that were up on the mine site that had accumulated water. And animals would go in there. So the elk birthing ground are very close to the mine site. So elk, moose, deer, all the animals that we harvest and need to continue, you know, with our families out there, we don't know if they have been impacted or not. There was at one point a time when the animals start showing up with these growths inside, and the tribe was trying to get those into Spokane to get them tested, but that, it kind of fizzled out. It didn't go anywhere.
Well, and then there's some language that appears even in the white paper that was just put out about this latest round of the attempt to loosen these standards for cleanup. I feel like it's so difficult because the burden of proof is on the community that's being affected to, you know, quote unquote, prove that this uranium site is the source of these health issues. And it seems that the company has very little burden on them to respond.
Right. Because they are only involved in the technical aspects. The same with EPA. We're only involved with the technical aspects of this closure process. But the tribe was able to get in a culturally relevant scenario into the process. As far as the closure, to be able to look at the issues around our gathering of roots and berries and medicinal plants, our subsistence lifestyle, and the impacts that resulted from the mining activity and how, you know, how significant that loss has been.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are very much concerns in terms of the health. One of the other issues is that we've had a mortality study conducted by the Northwest Indian Health Board, and there have been a couple of other studies on environmental health issues, but the two of the studies did not include the mining issue. They didn't ask a question about it. And we're, you know, so when we were trying to advocate for the community, that was a big issue for us in terms of looking at that. And with Indian Health Service being an arm of the government and being the primary health care provider for the tribal community, they have been one of the most reluctant to come to the table and address the needs of the community. And unfortunately, what results is that people go undiagnosed, misdiagnosed, or when the diagnosis occurs, it occurs in stage four, which is when people are, you know, at the most, the next level is death. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and
that's always a concern. Mm-hmm. In terms.
And I imagine, I don't know if there's a precedent for trying to even measure the impact in terms, like financially, of all of that misdiagnosis on people, you know, to hold, again, to attempt to hold the company responsible for these health impacts. If I imagine if the healthcare provider is not cooperating with that, then that becomes a harder process.
Yes, it is a harder process. It is a harder process.
Yeah. So, I know we've only got about 5 or 6 minutes together left on the phone, but I'm wondering if you can just let people know what is needed. If people are hearing about this for the first time, or if they've been engaged in the past over the 25 years of this struggle or more, what do you need right now in terms of support?
We need people to show up to the meeting tomorrow night to let EPA know that aside from a totally, you know, a community that has been disenfranchised for so long and are in such grieving pain, that, and in survival mode, that it's very difficult to get outside that box, to do anything that can make a difference. It's very hard for people on the reservation to do that. Because for the most part, the lives have been calculated and oppressed and, you know, averted by educational systems, by religious systems, by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, by, you know, Indian Health Service, by all these systems that has rendered people powerless. So a lot of times it's important to have allies to be able to speak as well about not only that are we on the front lines. I always say we're the canaries in the mine, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're the first ones hit. Secondary is the rest of society if nobody pays attention, because those toxins will eventually reach, you know, the Spokane River in a bigger way. And that's unfortunate, and that will impact more people along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to be able to you know, contact the legislators, learn more. Luckily, tomorrow we're going to have two EPA representatives there. Our first meeting they didn't want us to have a meeting. They said, no, we're not going to have a meeting. It's not warranted at this point. And we went ahead and put a meeting together and said, well, we feel it's very warranted because it's a life and death matter for our people. And so the main thing is to learn more about it, get involved if you can, and write the letters and make those phone contacts to our representatives in order to put some pressure, particularly on EPA, to stand their ground and do what's right for the total population, not for corporations.
Mm-hmm. And so if you missed it earlier, that meeting is tomorrow, Tuesday, the 26th. Is that right? Yeah. From 6 to 8 p.m. at the EWU Center, which is downtown here, downtown Spokane, 668 North River Point Boulevard, Suite A. I'll also include in the podcast notes some of the emails for the EPA contacts that folks are asking to get in touch with. And really anything else that you send me, Deb, I'll send out to,
okay,
to everyone else. Is there anything else you want to add just for people to consider as they think about this, or just to think about if, yeah.
I think it's just important overall in whatever way we can help, whether it's this issue or it's, you know, about the water, because bottom line, if we don't protect the water, then we go against ourselves. Water is life, and we have to keep reminding ourselves water is life. And this will definitely impact the water. And so it's important, you know, for humanity to protect all that we can, because it's a loss to humanity if we don't step up and fight for our rights as individuals to have a quality of life and fight for future generations, our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. And then on and on, mm-hmm. that we stand up for future generations because we've had a chance, the allowance to be able to at least live a decent, you know, life on the earth as it is today. But as things are going on, it just seems like it's going into more extreme, you know, for the people. So that's about what I have to say.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for making time to talk to me today.
And well, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, of course.
So, great.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
And if you're just joining us halfway through the show here, you're listening to Praxis. That was Deb Abrahamson. She is a longtime activist, member of the Spokane tribe. She and her family and her organization, the Shawl Society, have just done so much in this region. And yeah, especially with educating folks and staying on top of this cleanup process at the Midnight Mine, which, as I said earlier in my conversation with her, so many people are unaware of its existence, including myself until just a couple years ago. So, I'm going to take a quick break and then come back with some more information about this meeting and all that. So be right back. Trust the movement, I negate the chaos. All right, welcome back. You're listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor. Just talking in the first half of the show with Deb Abrahamson from the Shawl Society, Spokane Tribe activist. So I am going to share with you Shawl Society, and I believe working with Riverkeeper at Center for Justice, put out this white paper on on this current iteration, as she was talking about this attempt to kind of squeeze out of the cleanup standards. I'm just going to read some of it because it has information in a digestible form that I don't trust myself to try to summarize. So Newmont Mining Co., as Deb said, now the largest mining company on Earth after a buyout, I think last year, the year before, requests lower cleanup standard on Washington State's largest Superfund site. In July of 2018, the Newmont Mining Company, the company responsible for cleaning up soil and water contamination at the former Midnight Mine on the Spokane Indian Reservation, has requested that the EPA significantly relax a previously agreed standard of cleanup by initiating a legal process called an Explanation of Significant Difference. According to the 1999 Record of Decision, Newmont is responsible for removing contaminants from the soil around the abandoned uranium mine to a level of 4.7 picograms of radium per liter. This level was determined to match the average background level of radium that exists in undisturbed soil surrounding the mine. Now, 5 years into the cleanup, the company wants to almost double the acceptable level of contamination to 8.2 picograms per liter. Newmont claims the background levels of contamination that were found in the soil in 1999 and upon which the previous agreement was made need to be reevaluated for correctness. They're concerned that a very large area on the reservation will have to be excavated to achieve earlier agreed background levels of contamination. Disturbing such a large area of soil, they say, will release further contaminants into the air, potentially causing more exposure than is being prevented by remediation. They're also concerned that if they're required to excavate such a large area, they will run into problems storing the contaminated tailings and treating contaminated water. To support this request to alter the levels, Newmont independently sampled some areas not impacted by mining and found that levels exceeded the cleanup level identified in the previous agreement. Spokane tribal members, nearby residents, and others are skeptical of Newmont's ESD request for several reasons. First, the protocols they used were not provided, and the techniques they used may not result in appropriate representative natural background results. Second, it seems unlikely that background levels of contamination would have changed from 1999 to today. By changing the testing locations, eliminating outlier data points, and changing the method of testing, it may be possible to present a different picture of background contamination than what was originally found and agreed. The bottom line is that the additional sampling Newmont accomplished likely did not result in an appropriate natural background level for Ra-226 or other radionuclides. And just to interject for a second from the report itself, I believe this is part of what Deb was talking about when we were speaking just a moment ago, that when Newmont made these requests to the EPA to reassess some of these things, they got same day or within a week positive responses from the EPA. So that's a little bit shady, though it's not listed in this paper. Second, now I'm back in the paper. Second, as a for-profit corporation, Newmont would have every reason to avoid costly cleanup, especially since the area of cleanup is much larger than expected. Third, the background sampling was well thought out. The sampling information provided in Newmont's request for revised cleanup levels may not be in accordance with the law. Fourth, the EPA as an agency has been weakened by decreased funding and support and has fewer resources to put toward research and enforcement, providing Newmont an opportunity to stall or change the negotiated timeline and levels of cleanup. So, again, then there's a section that describes what's at stake, and I think that Deb already did a great job explaining what's at stake in terms of the entire ecosystem, with the ultimate observable result of human health, but the health of the entire ecosystem, water's life, as she said. And I'll be sure to post some photos when I put the podcast up of what this pit looks like. This is an open pit uranium mine that has since filled with water, as she said. So, and there wasn't a fence until, I'm not sure what the fence situation is currently, but until 10 years ago, there was no fence of any kind. So, there's video of animal tracks leading to and from. Obviously, we all remember the water cycle from elementary school science. It's traveling out of that pit one way or another, and in many ways. So, yeah. And the observable health effects that she described that are devastating to that community and everyone downstream, ultimately. So, I am going to share with you something with a little more background and a few more voices from people who are directly affected. This is a short very short doc that Jeff Ferguson, who, shout out to Jeff Ferguson, he does a lot of great documentary work and similar work here in Spokane. He made this 10 years ago, and it's still very relevant now, so I'm just going to play the audio from this for you, and I'll also include the link if you'd like to watch the attached footage as well. So this is just a little bit more background on the Midnight Mine. And again, if you want to be part of this effort to demand that the EPA pay more attention to this and get the cleanup done right at Midnight Mine, you can go to that meeting at the EWU Center down on River Point Boulevard from 6 to 8 tomorrow night. And I will post that link in the podcast and on Facebook and all of that. So here is that short doc, the Midnight Uranium Mine.
In January of 1881, President Rutherford B. Hayes, by executive order, formally declared 157,376 acres west of Spokane the Spokane Indian Reservation. This was to be the new and smaller home of the Spokane tribe. This was the land where the Spokane tribe was to live, hunt, and fish for generations to come. But then, in 1953, uranium was discovered on the reservation, and in 1955, uranium mining began at the Midnight Mine and continued for 26 years.
It started out as a small operation, and the company was called Don Mining, and these two gentlemen were actually looking for gold, and then somehow they found uranium. Later on, Newmont Gold Company got involved, and they're currently the largest gold mining company in the world.
Now they've dug this pit down to the highest grade ore, and then they leave it open, contaminating everybody, the highest grade ore there is in this country, and they leave it open, contaminating us for years until now that we forced them or had them get this Superfund cleanup. Well, that's still taking a few years to clean up, so we're all sitting around this. The animals go there and drink the water, eat it. We eat the animals, we're contaminated more.
There's no fencing around the site. For 15 or 20 years after the mine was closed and shut down, there wasn't even any water control or water cleanup done at all. It flowed straight to the Spokane River and then to the Columbia.
And this radiation here don't just affect our tribe. It goes into the streams. And I'm a hunter, and I don't no longer hunt around both the mills or fish down the streams that's right close to those mills, eat the fish or anything.
And after they were shut down, the reason was a drop in the price of uranium. And it happened across the country where companies would just pull out and leave the sites as is. Up there at the mine site now, you can go into the empty offices and see paperwork on the floor, file cabinets left there. The machinery was just left. There's stockpiles of ore that were ready to be shipped out. And because the price was so low, they ended up just leaving the ore there. And so across the country, this drop in uranium prices led to the companies just pulling out, and it became non-profitable to mine. So they left sites as is and abandoned them.
We had acid, chloride spills out there, and all they would do is it'd go down to ground, and they'd take it and just wash it down into the parking lot, and then it'd wash down into the Spokane River. And then it travels on down through the Spokane, through the Columbia, contaminates everybody downstream through there. So it's not only contaminating us, it's contaminating all the people around us too, you know, people downstream.
I was on a 14-year hiatus there. When I wasn't on the council, I wasn't that much involved. When I was out, I thought that was all in place going on. When I got on the council last year, you know, almost a year ago now, to find out that EPA is just now coming up with the plan after all that time, and on all those gallons of water that have accumulated up there and drained down into the Spokane arm, I'm surprised that there hasn't been a bigger push to get that taken care of. So I can't answer what happened in that time period. But when I left, when I was on the council, we started the fight, or the movement, I guess, to get that reclaimed.
And then there was years ago where they used some of that ore to do our driveways. They used some of that the supposed to have been waste, but then their waste that was at midnight was hotter than the high-grade ore that Western Nuclear used to do. We were going to use Midnight's waste and haul it across, straight across over to Western Nuclear, so then that waste was higher than the high-grade we used over in Western Nuclear. So then it was high-grade ore. It shouldn't have been used in our driveways. It shouldn't have been brought out anywhere.
On the reservation, the main indicator of health is the fact that our elders are gone. And so that's the first indicator, is that we have a huge loss of our elder population. And there's all kinds of different cancers, emphysema, lung problems, kidney problems, and that type of thing.
I just know what's done to me and my tribe all my life. And like I say, I've been a grave digger all my life. I see my people die, and I see them hurt and all that, and get crippled up more and more, and then I got to bury them. See a lot of my people aching, sore, rheumatism, that are healthy, like my cousin Janie Abrahamson. They grew up just down the stream from the Don mining plant and stuff, and she's having a lot of problems now. A lot of the rest of the families there are having problems with the aches and pains. I do myself, but I just keep it going. Like I say, I've been a grave digger for my tribe for many years, buried hundreds of my people, and had to see my people suffer. And what I consider the government knew what was happening, I think. And they really didn't care what they were doing to us.
Mine workers were not adequately informed about the hazards of working with radioactive materials, and as a result, they unknowingly contaminated themselves as well as their families. The long-term exposure to radiation to this day continues to wreak havoc on the Spokane tribe.
All right, so there's a little more overview for you there. Again, that is a short video that's published online by Jeff Ferguson. He's a local documentarian who does a lot of great work. And the voices that you heard in there, since I realized they were captioned, the man who was the gravedigger who was speaking throughout is Harold Campbell. And then the woman's voice you heard was Twala Abrahamson Swan, she's Deb's daughter, and also a former host of Intertribal Beat here on KYRS. So you may have recognized that voice from the past. So again, that was made 10 years ago, and all of these issues are still very much at the forefront. In this case, if you're just joining us at the end of the show and you want to hear the beginning, you can find the podcast either by going to kyrs.org, navigating to Programs, and then Praxis to find the most recent show, the link to the podcast stream, and all of that. Or you can go directly to soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO. You can also email me for links and questions at praxis@kyrs.org. So again, I'll just plug this meeting that's happening tomorrow. If you're around tomorrow, if you know people who care about this issue, I'll make sure to get the podcast online in the next hour or two so that you can send it if folks would like to hear what Deb had to say or anything else that was shared in the hour today. The meeting is at the EWU Center at the River Point Campus, Eastern's River Point Campus, 668 North River Point Boulevard, Suite A. And it's tomorrow, Tuesday, February 26th, from 6 to 8 p.m. So I'm sure that the organizers would really appreciate a packed room for that. They're also asking that folks write letters or emails or phone calls to, let me find her first name, Linda Meyer. She's the EPA project manager for this project. So they'd really like her to receive a lot of letters. And I'll share a link to this paper that has some sample language. But the main asks are to to ask that the EPA not issue that ESD, the basically the new review data from Newmont, the mining company, until an independent expert has had the opportunity to reevaluate the new data. Just communicating that inconsistencies and problems might exist with the background data and the manner that the new data was evaluated. Basically telling them, can someone independent evaluate this soil and evaluate the background levels that they're working on, and not the company that has everything to gain from lowering this standard. They're also asking that people ask the EPA to revisit the background sampling that was accomplished for the original feasibility study and determine its soundness. Basically saying if the sampling was high quality and defensible, then the new data from the mining company should not be considered. They're asking for additional independent studies on the old data and the new data. Just having the community ask for that, which makes a lot of sense. They also want transparency from the EPA on how this existing cleanup level was calculated, what their rationale is, and all the rest. And then also make sure that the community involvement plan that, if you've listened through the whole hour, that Deb was mentioning at the beginning of the show, it took them 6 years to come up with a plan to engage the tribe, to engage the community as a whole, and it immediately wasn't followed as soon as Newmont wanted to come in with this new plan. So they're asking that the community ask that the community plan be honored moving forward, and that updates are provided at public locations throughout the area, so in Wellpinit, Ford, and Spokane. So that's what they're asking for. You can email Linda Meyer at Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R, Linda@epamail.epa.gov. Again, I'll include all of that on the podcast. And yeah, I also highly recommend that people, you know, this is a, we're always talking about history on the show often, and this is, I think, a lesser known part of the story of our region. I guess a lot of people do know the nuclear story of our region with the Tri-Cities, with Hanford being down there on the Columbia, but the fact that we had this huge source for that nuclear development in the form of these uranium mines, just, I mean, 40 minutes from where I'm sitting right now, from where you might be sitting in your car, I think bears some revisitation for folks. So if you just look up Midnight Mine, there's a ton of data, both if you're more of a, I don't know, a wonk for these sort of things, you can read the papers from the EPA dating back all the way. There's also a lot of more digestible information out there. So I'll try to include some links to more information. So again, you know, this is hopefully a no-brainer for folks to support the largest mining company on earth versus the regular people who are the people of this place, who have stewarded it and protected it and lived on and with it for all of these many years. And yeah, and are facing, as Deb said in the interview, life and death consequences that will quite literally trickle down to the rest of us. So take a minute to learn about it. Show up to the meeting if you can, and I will do my best to keep listeners updated via the show on this issue moving forward. So thanks for listening. I'll be back next week with a brand new show. It will be our fun drive next week, so prep yourself for that. I will have some exciting special things happening, and then interviews and all the rest through the rest of March. So thanks so much for listening. And again, if you need to find this show, if you want to listen to the beginning of it, you can find it at soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO.
Well, I don't know, but I've been told uranium ore is worth more than gold. I sold my cad, I bought me a Jeep, I got that bug and I can't sleep. Uranium fever has gone and got me down. Uranium.
uranium fever is spreading all around. With a Geiger counter in my hand,
I'm going out to stake me some government land.
Uranium fever has gone and got me down. Well, I had a talk with the